a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, kids, here we go. Episode 308. 308, man. All right, so, oh, goodness, back in the saddle at the old coffee house day job, pulling some shots, doing my thing, first day back yesterday. I tell you what, I am by nature an absolute vampire. I am a vampire. And, you know, what I mean by that is if you give me, you know, any kind of freedom with my schedule whatsoever. Hold on, coffee sip. If you give me any kind of freedom whatsoever with my schedule, I will stay up late and sleep in. It's just the way it is. I cannot. There's just no way around it. I just can't. That's just what's going to happen. It's just. I don't know. I will stay up until 2 o'clock and sleep until 10. It's just. I do my best work. Like if I can get on that schedule and stay there, I get my best kind of like second. I get my second wind about 11:30, and I'm like, boom, let's do this, you know. So I kind of got on. I had 6 days off, and 5 of those days the store was closed. So I kind of like get into my. Turn the phone off, just kind of chill, kind of, you know. And so you heard about my weekend. It was Easter weekend too, so there was like so much going on and everything. And I went to the vigil, and then, you know, so I was just kind of like, I got over on my vampire schedule, you know. And I went to bed at like 12:45. I had to get up at like 5:45 yesterday. And man, I tell you what, that transition day when I got to come back to real life is just brutal. I was so tired. And then last night I went to bed and I woke up this morning at like 3:25 with a sinus headache. Managed to knock it off and get back to sleep. Woke up with another headache again. I don't know what's going on. Got myself dehydrated or something. And I didn't drink enough water yesterday, I guess. So anyway, yesterday was brutal. I just had like, I walked back in, hadn't been at work in like 6 days. And you know, one of those days where like everything can go wrong and like, you're like, oh, so you're going to be on. Oh, well at least we're, oh, but we don't have to, what is the, oh, come on. Seriously. It was just like all day yesterday. It's just like, it felt like reality was piling on yesterday. It was absolutely brutal. So by the end of yesterday, after a poor night's sleep and the brutality of being the brunt of reality all day long, I was just like, I was a hurting unit, coach, man. I was hurting bad. Oh, I was just done. So my back was killing me. I was in like a horrible mood. So, but you know, I got in the car and I before I even left, I texted a friend. I was like, man, this is a brutal day. She called me back and we talked for like an hour and a half, and it's amazing what just talking through something and then getting some perspective and then getting outside yourself and hearing about someone else's day and stuff. Just a conversation with a friend can change just absolutely everything. It's one of the most just simple and important things. And it just makes me realize how deeply important it is that we stay connected and that we let ourselves be connected with and that we create structures and create places that are places in structures of openness that allow people to stay connected and with other people beyond just like Facebook and saying, oh man, today sucked. And everybody like, oh, sorry. You know, hey, just hang in there, buddy. You know, I mean, a good solid hour and a half conversation that went beyond what went wrong that day. We ended up talking about the nature of poetry and different types of poetry and ethnic poetry and how it's different from other types of poetry, and these different and different than itself, and different expressions over the centuries, and these different locale, you know, just all these different beautiful things about what poetry and what metaphor is. And by the time I was done, I was like, I felt so much better. And, you know, I came away thinking how incredibly important that is. So, speaking of connecting to people and important things, a big fat birthday shout out to Sarah the Quitter Stacy. The Quitter turned, I don't know. You're not supposed to say how old women are. She's 26. I'm going to say it. She's young. When you're in your 20s, you're 26, you're the prime of your life. I mean, you haven't even peaked yet. I mean, you're like killing it at 26. You should shout from the rooftops, I'm 26. So happy 26th birthday. I see I outed you. And it was kind of a painful birthday for Sarah the Quitter Stacy, but she made it through. She had joy in her pain. You know, it's such an inside joke. Anyway, so we all went to a tavern over on South Pearl. And, okay, so sidebar story on this trip. So earlier in the day, on that day, I guess it was on Tuesday, I met up with Everett Fritz to talk about a project down in Florida we're thinking about doing. And so we met for sushi. And so my foot was kind of hurting and I kind of had a little arthritis episode, you know, and so I was like pulling up to this really popular kind of like area where it's really hard to get a close parking spot. And, you know, and so I did the St. Anthony thing and I'm like, all right, St. Anthony, help me find a parking spot. And boom, right as I'm pulling up, someone pulled out. There was no one competing for the spot. I didn't even have to like turn the corner. I just pulled my trajectory. If I just kept going, I just drove right into the spot right by the restaurant. I'm like, you know, maybe like 100 feet from the restaurant. I'm like, awesome. Great. And then I got the tavern that night and, I was like, and it's South Pearl is notorious for bad parking, right? Especially in that area right there around Sushi Den and Tavern and Stella's Coffee and all that. It's just like packed, right? And I was like, okay, let's try this again. I'm like, all right, St. Anthony, I need a parking spot. And then I kind of laughed and I kind of said to St. Anthony, I said, man, you're going to have a hard time beating that spot you got me at the sushi bar today. And I heard almost audibly in my being, oh yeah, watch this. And I pulled up and someone pulled out and there was a big huge spot like literally right in front of Tavern. It's like you never get that good of a spot. Someone pulled out, I got the killer spot. So twice in one day, good old St. Anthony came through for me. You know, and I didn't have this planned, but I got a little room on the first chatty first segment. Let me finish. So it was me and all kinds of wonderful people showed up. Shiny, the Disney Warrior Princess, her big Texan, Bland, Maker of Fires, and Frollo from Hopro Mogo, one quarter of the Catholic Stuff You Should Know podcast. That's right. That's how I roll. These are the people I roll with. The biggest Catholic podcast in America. I have chicken wings with him. That's how I roll. I'm kind of a big deal. I don't think you understand. Everyone should understand. Kind of a big deal. And the lovely and talented Katie Heil from Tatanga Bomoy was there. And Karen and Kim McCutcheon. Congratulations to Kim McCutcheon. She is killing it as an app designer now. Got her first big project. She's killing it. I'm trying to think of who else showed up. People that I love, that I care about. So we had a good time. A good time was had by all. And so, Sarah Stacy, congratulations on making it 26 years. Good job. So St. Anthony, this is a sidebar to the sidebar. I used to think that was the most superstitious, weirdest thing to do. Like when I was growing up as kind of a cultural Catholic, you know, and there's kind of the old superstitious ladies in my family. If you lost something, like, well, pray to St. Anthony, he'll help you find it, you know? And I'm like, oh, come on, really? Really? There's like this man who spent his entire life following God, and now he's in heaven, and he's sitting there trying, he's like trying to have a cup of tea with the Virgin Mary and some guy that is one of the greatest saints that we've never heard of that got ran over by an ox cart in 384. And they're like having tea, and it's like his cell phone keeps going off, and he's like, oh, hold on a second. So-and-so can't find their keys. All right, they're good. All right, what were we saying? I mean, he's constantly being interrupted by everybody wanting stuff found, right? But I've had a couple stories, but when one time, so I have sleep apnea, right? And so if I don't have my machine and I can't sleep, I can't sleep. I will stop breathing while I sleep, right? It's brutal. So I was traveling, and it's back when I had my old machine where it had a 3-prong on it. And you get to some of these older hotels and they only have 2 prongs in the wall. So I always carry an adapter with me. So I get to this, like I'm on a business trip. I had a really important meeting. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning, late flight, pull into my hotel. Go, I'm getting my machine set up, 2-prong. It's only a 3-prong, or it's a 2-prong wall. I'm like, no big deal. Got it. Look, no adapter, no adapter, no adapter. I look all over the place. I call down to the, and ask them if they have to the front desk. Do you have an adapter? No. Can I look in your lost and found? No, there's nothing in there. All right. What's open? Nothing is open. Okay. So finally I'm like, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bite the bullet. I have nothing else to do. There's nothing to be lost except pride. St. Anthony, help me. I heard almost audibly deep inside my soul, look in it. There's a tear in the fabric. It's down inside the inside your suitcase, inside the frame. So I looked around inside, found this tiny little hole in the frame, in the lining, and opened it up with my finger, dug around and found it. Sure enough, my adapter was in the frame of my suitcase. St. Anthony, he is not playing around whatsoever. And that's actually a good intro to what we're talking about today. You're listening to The Counterposition. We'll be right back.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See, only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your still caffeinating properly host, Andrew Whaley, and this is episode 308. And we were just talking about St. Anthony, about saints interceding for you or helping you out from beyond the grave in eternity. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about today a little bit. This is kind of like, this ought to be the Halloween episode. I should have saved this, but just a few references all came together, stuff I wanted to talk about, and I saw a theme, so I'm going to go with it. And it's Easter. We're going to talk about life beyond death in kind of a creepy, weird way. So before we get into that, I have a project. You guys don't ever want to give me feedback. But I love feedback. All right. So a new listener, somebody who's never really listened to the show, but saw that I had a show, said, hey, could you send me like a curated list? Like, so I could kind of catch up, like, what are some of your best episodes? And I'm like, I never thought about that. So I'm going to go back through all the old episodes and kind of, I don't know that, you know, the Hakuna Matata episodes, like kind of my favorite. There's a bunch of them, but then it dawned on me, there's a bunch of you listening who have listened to like all the shows or most of the shows. And I know different people remember things that I've forgotten I've even talked about. So I'm asking for your help on something. Okay. I want to know your favorite shows. So go to breadboxmedia.com, click on the podcast link, go follow the shows down the side, click on my show, The Counterposition with Andrew Whaley. It's under the T's, I think, for The Counterposition. And then I want you to go that'll take you to the Podbean that has only my episodes in it. It should have pretty much all 308 episodes. I want you to go through and pick out your favorite episodes. If you have one, just go back to older posts, hit older posts over and over again till you find it. Find it, cut and paste the URL, email it to me at thecounterposition@gmail.com. That's thecounterposition@gmail.com. Send me or if you don't want to go to all that trouble, to send me the episode number and why you like it or something. But I want your help in curating a list. I want to create a curated list and kind of maybe put it up on the Facebook page and some stuff like that, where if someone goes, hey, I want to listen to your show, I want, you know, is there anything like a really good episode? Yeah, we actually have a list. Here's a list. And we can add to it over time, assuming I do something worth listening to. I mean, who knows? Maybe this episode will be on there. Maybe this is going to be a new favorite. You never know. All right, so there you go. thecounterposition@gmail.com. Or you can tweet me at counterposition. Or you can throw it on the Facebook page. If you're not part of our Facebook page, you get on there. I don't do much on the Facebook page. I am the worst social media engager in the world. I was just talking to Everett about this yesterday. He's like, if you're going to do ministry, if you're going to do a show, if you're going to do anything on speaking, you have to promote yourself and you have to use social media. So if the sound is a little different today, I am in the new improved bunker underneath a center of the new evangelization, nestled somewhere in the Rockies, not unlike NORAD. And instead of setting up my own gear, I'm using my own recorder today, but I decided to just go ahead and swap it into their setup. So I'm using a different mic and stuff today. So I guess the same mic I use, but it's a different one, and I guess a different cord. So if there's any sound difference today, and I don't have my arm, so I'm like talking straight on to the mic, kind of bending over. I'm going to give myself a backache because I don't have my, so I got like a table stand today. So a little different setup. So if it sounds weird, you're like, why does he sound weird today? That's why. All right. So what are we going to talk about today? Okay. So I was talking about St. Anthony, right? So we have this belief that the people who die, you know, you transition, but you go to either you're going to hell or you're going to heaven or you're in purgatory and you're kind of like working out. Purgatory is a state. It's a process. If you're in purgatory, you're going to heaven. You know, it's kind of like the anteroom to heaven, so to speak. It's this final cleansing to get all the hooks the world has in you out of you, right? Talked about that on the Halloween episode last year. So I want to talk about a few stories came across my path this week, and I want to talk about death and the dead and our relationship to that and the different cultural relationships to that and different ways we view that. And it's kind of, so little warning there, we're going to talk about some stuff's going to be, some of the stuff we're going to talk about, a couple of these stories I'm going to talk about are a little weird, a little gross, maybe, maybe not for the little kids, you know. I think if you're like, but kids like zombies and stuff, right? I mean, it's like, so, I mean, but we're going to be talking a little bit about dead bodies and stuff, right? So, If you're the kind of person, or you got a little person with you that you don't want to hear somebody talk about a body, then you don't probably want to listen to this one until the said person with little ears is not around. All right. So there you go. Disclaimer. Going to talk about creepy, gross stuff a little bit. All right. So, what got me started on this was, what's this guy's name? I was listening to the BBC. And I hit the link. There's this guy who's a Jamaican born man who lives in Minneapolis, and he writes kind of sci-fi and fantasy, right? Marlon James. He's a Jamaican novelist, and he lives in Minneapolis, and he's working on a new trilogy about vampires. But they're vampires, it's set in Africa. And here's the part that I thought was interesting. These vampires live and attack and everything right in the middle of the day. And that's because, in the vampire myths of Africa, it's a daytime thing, right? This idea that they can't come out into the light. And the reason why, here's where it gets interesting, right? So the nighttime, they call midnight. He says they call midnight the noontime of the dead, the noon of the dead. But it's not creepy for them. Because what they mean, they think that, like, yeah, literally, like, the dead might walk the earth. You might see ghosts or something like that. But it's our ancestors. It's like you might, you know, bump into grandpa and you can take some counsel from him. About, I mean, they it's a comforting. The fact that the dead might walk at midnight in the dark is a comforting thing to them. The scary things are, like, in the daytime for them. And the idea of something dead coming back in some way is not scary for them. It's comforting because it's their ancestors, right? So that just kind of hit me that it's like, oh, that's so strange. Because our relationship, like, the dark is like darkness. And he was talking about, no, I mean, the dark is like, he goes, look at the words we describe, you know, like oil and dirt that's good to grow in. It's dark. It's rich. Black is rich and dark and good. Right? And I'm not going to speculate. I want, but part of me wants to think about if that might have something to do with, you know, the color of people's skin. You associate yourself with dark. So you're comforted by, and you think you're comfortable in, you think it's okay, it's good for darkness, right? You've dark soil, dark oil, these things are rich and dark, and you're dark, right? And it's like, and maybe if you're like some pasty Irish guy, like I'm not pasty, I'm pretty dark, but, you know, if you're like a pasty Irish guy, and you're like shining in the dark, it's like, maybe you're like, oh no, the daylight, but you think you'd be scared of the sun to get burned. But I guess there's not a lot of sunlight in places where people are pale. That's why they're pale. But, you know, I don't know. There might not be anything to that, but I just always interesting that, but African vampires are a daytime reality, and the noontime of the dead is a comforting reality. Cause it's the people that are your ancestors. Right. So I remember seeing the first time I ever saw someone who was dead was when I was like 6 or 7 years old, 6 years old, I think. And my Uncle Jute died. And my Uncle Jute was married to my Aunt Rabbit. I hope Kevin Clay's listening. He loves it when I talk about Aunt Rabbit. My Aunt Rabbit and Uncle Jute. And they were Wilford and Ollie was their actual names. But they called them, called their nicknames from their kids when they were little kids was like Jute and Rabbit. And so it was like Uncle Jute and Aunt Rabbit. And so Aunt Rabbit's husband, Uncle Jute, who just treated me like gold. He was like my grandpa. He's raised my dad. And he just, I felt so loved and so safe and able to be like a little dangerous, you know, cause he just like, you know, I was just so affirmed and so free in his presence. Right. And it just meant a lot to me. I loved my Uncle Jute so much, right? And so I'm like 6 years old, and my Uncle Jute died. And there, I remember overhearing them talking about whether or not to take me and all this stuff. And anyway, they took me to the funeral home. And I got to see my Uncle Jute laying in a coffin like that. And it kind of freaked me out, right? I was like, I didn't know what to do with that, right? So So that night, I went back. Now, this might have been a dream. It might have been whatever. I'm not making any metaphysical claims. But I remember laying in bed that night and waking up in the middle of the night with that feeling like someone's looking at me. And I woke up and there standing at the end of my bed was my Uncle Jute. Classic Scooby-Doo ghost, you know, glowing a little bit, kind of see-through. I mean, just like the, I mean, like, that's why I think it might have been my imagination or a dream. But I'm just like looking at my Uncle Jute and I'm like, and I wasn't scared at all because it's my Uncle Jute. And he said, hey, I just want you to know I love you and I'm okay. You know, I'm with Jesus. And I'm like, okay, I love you too. You know, and then he just left. I'm gone. That's it. And so when I think about like these guys being comforted by that, at first I was like, that's weird. Like you're in the dark and there's, you know, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute, man. It's like Uncle Jude. I mean, that was a very comforting thing for me. All right, so when we get back, we're going to keep talking about dead people and things like that. So you're listening to The Counter Position.
Lynn Howie Craver hanging in his dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't sting, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humbly drinking coffee. I forgot to come up with something cool. I am humble today, or at least I'm humbled. Tired and recovering from a sinus headache still. So we're talking about death and what happens beyond death and how different cultures and experiences happen, kind of deal with that kind of a thing, right? And I was talking about this Marlon James, who's a science fiction writer, for a Jamaican man who lives in Minneapolis, and he's writing a trilogy about vampires in Africa, and they're a daytime reality. And they call, in that culture, they call midnight the noontime of the dead but they're comforted by that because, like, it'd be cool, your ancestors come around. I just talked about seeing my Uncle Jute's ghost when I was six and it being a comforting experience, right? So now is the time to talk about, like, purgatory, okay? We in the Catholic Church, and I would argue in the biblical faith, if you read St. Paul, believe that after death, there is a process, and that process should rightly take place on earth, where you kind of let all the connections that you have and all the stuff that you kind of like are connected to and the hooks that have gotten into you from this world, you get them out and you're completely free and you are ready to go to heaven. You're ready to be one with God. You are completely cleansed. You know, a lot of times that doesn't happen. And this isn't a matter of, like, you're held guilty and you got to pay this off. We use that language sometime. I think that's a little misleading. The idea is that you need to get the final application of the blood of Christ, right? So I'm not going to do a whole show on purgatory. I've done that before and we'll talk about it some other time. But the idea that there are people that the veil between this and people who have passed on, we don't think that people just cease to exist. They don't go dormant in the ground. We think that people are alive and who they are in themselves. And some of them are actually going through this process. And we believe that it exists and that our prayer helps. That's kind of that's just about all we believe. Everything else is kind of theological speculation about it. So I remember that's just to go to say that, like, you know, like a ghost or something, it's not like, oh, they're haunted. But it's funny though, when you do see these ghosts, there's two things. A, this is very anti-Gnostic, right? Because if you see a ghost, it looks like the person used to be. Their wispy ethereal spirit is shaped like the bone and steak that used to be them, right? We're marked eternally. And in the Christian faith, we're going to get our bodies back. We're not our true self isn't this wispy eternal spirit that's trapped in this prison that's going to finally escape. We're coming back to this thing. We're going to have a body, right? So that's kind of part of the story we're talking about today, is the story of how we think about our bodies in this, right? But I remember hearing a story, and I've talked about this before, of this priest talking about how he was talking about guardian angels, actually, and he was talking about a kind of a demonic experience he had in the end of this. But during the course of the night before this demonic experience, which I won't go into, he woke up and there's, like, a guy standing at the end of the bed, you know, in a trench coat with, like, a fedora hat on. He's standing there, and the priest said, do you need mass to said for you? And the guy just nodded his head and he's like, oh, and disappeared. So he, like, said, okay, note to self, say a mass for whoever that was, you know, he's in purgatory. And then later that night, he wakes up and there's a soccer player standing at the end of his bed with a hole shot right through the middle of him in a green uniform. And he said, do you need a mass said for you? And the soccer player nodded and then it's kind of disappeared. So then the last thing that happened was, like, this sketchy kind of demonic attack that was kind of faking that same experience, but then turned ugly. But then the next day he gets up and he reads a newspaper. And sure enough, there had been a soccer player that a fan had gotten mad about the outcome of a match, walked on somewhere in South America and blew a hole through the middle of the sky. And there was a picture of the dude that he saw at the end of his bed with a wound where that would have been. So those are both very creepy things, but the idea that there's a very thin layer between where they're at and what's going on with them and what's going on with us, and that can kind of that can become transparent at moments, right? This goes to say that we're not completely cut off. Right now, we don't go seeking to communicate with dead spirits and necromancy and all that. That's not what I'm talking about. Okay, so what got me thinking about this was a couple of things. Was that story that I heard about the guy writing a vampire story. But then I heard, now this is the part that's kind of creepy. I heard a story over the weekend on the news. And it must have been, it was a trending topic. Like when I went to search on Google, which I kind of wish I hadn't done, about this. There, it was like, it was one of the recent searches that popped up as an option. So in Indonesia, in Sulawesi, they got this weird tradition, like with their deceased loved ones. And I have never heard or seen anything creepier or weirder than this in my life. Well, that's not true, but it is pretty strange, right? So picture a house. There's multiple generations living in the house, and there's a room in the middle of the house, a bedroom, you know, and you go in and there's grandma laying on the bed and there's some coffee and rice, someone brought her, and there's a toilet in the corner, you know, a traditional toilet you can take out and dump and bring back in. And it's clean, sitting there waiting for her. And she's basically an invalid, you know, and she's laying there, and little kids run in and kind of like stroke her hair and say hi, put their hand on her arm, say hi to grandma, go. And you look, and then you realize that she's dead. She's been preserved with some kind of a chemical, but she's dead, and she's been dead for 12 years or like years. And so there's this tradition in this part of Sulawesi where they keep their loved ones around for a while, and they treat them as if they're an invalid recovering in the home. They bring them fresh coffee and rice and stuff every day. They put a toilet in the corner. They clean them and comb their hair and put fresh clothes on them. They take care of grandma like she's asleep because she's sick and you're helping her recover. And they save up for these really elaborate funerals, like huge, like, you know, they save up their whole life sometimes for this big knockout funeral for mom and dad or something. And they'll keep them around sometimes until they can have that funeral. And it may be this one, the one example they were using on there, 12 years. And the guy's kind of gray, and you can see kind of a couple of holes in him, like, you know, he got a bug bite or something like that, like something was kind of going wrong. But they preserve him with some kind of chemical, and they keep him around. I just thought that was the strangest thing. So then it gets weirder. I know you're thinking, what? So they have this big lavish funeral that they save up for their whole life. And then that doesn't end it. Cause like on their birthday or the day that they died or like 3 years later, they'll like go and they'll get grandma out, and they'll open up the coffin and they'll get grandma out, and they'll comb her hair and they'll clean her up real lovingly and meticulously, and they'll put fresh clothes on her, and they take pictures, and it's like, and they have, and then there's like a, you know, a certain day, it's like a family reunion kind of a day, and they all get everybody out. So you'll have grandma and grandpa and Uncle Bob and all these, and they just get them all out and they clean them all up and we take pictures. And so I made the mistake of plugging in. So don't do this unless you're okay with seeing this. Indonesia, Sulawesi, dead. And then I hit an image search. And there's all these images of these people just like having a party. And I was picturing like an extreme preservation, you know, like the way that I was expecting, the way that this is talked about it, like it was like, you know, I thought it was an extreme preservation, and it was going to be, they were going to look weird looking, but some of these are straight up corpses. I mean, they're straight up dead people. Like they look like dead people, and there's got them out, you know, and there's just smiling. There's grandpa that took his military uniform off him and washed it, put it back on, trimmed his mustache, put a cigarette in his mouth because he used to smoke, and they're all taking pictures with grandpa. I'm like, it's just the craziest thing I've ever seen, right? Now contrast that with the first time I ever saw one of my loved ones that hadn't been, you know, the dead at all, without, like, you know, the typical kind of like go to the funeral home experience. The first time I ever encountered a dead person was my grandmother died when I was living with my mom when I was running a coffee house. And my mom comes upstairs, wakes me up with, "Andy, get up, grandma's dead," which is a way to wake up in the morning. That'll wake you up quick. And I came downstairs expecting to see, you know, grandma quiet and asleep in her chair. But what I didn't know is that I had slept through the medics arriving and like pulling her out of the chair and trying to revive her and doing all this stuff. And so I come down and there's like my grandmother in the floor laying there. That was shocking. But grandma had been dead a couple of hours. I mean, grandma was, I mean, it was a weird situation. But these people, like, so contrast that with grandma's been dead for 15 years and they're like taking pictures with her. I cannot comprehend that. I mean, and I guess if you just have to grow, I don't know, you have to grow up with it, I guess. You have to be taught that this is normal in some way or whatever. I mean, think about this. This is like, Psycho, the Hitchcock film, or like there's a story from Key Largo about, or Key West, I think it was, where this guy like stole his wife's body and took it home and all this stuff. And it was a super creepy and he was clearly insane, but everybody thought it was like this great romance story that he couldn't let go of her or whatever. It's like, but if something like that happened in our culture, like it would make the news and someone would end up in a room with padded walls and a little hole to look at them. And they'd end up on meds because they're obviously nuts. Right. And this is a whole culture there that does this. It just shocked me. I just, and so I started thinking, why, what is that? What is that human impulse? Why is that? And then I got to thinking about maybe it's not that. So we're going to talk about that when we get back. You're listening to The Counter Position.
Then all the color glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone
Welcome
to see.
Welcome back to The Counter Position.
Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely. Oh, I'm lovely. And I'm dull.
All right, we're talking about death, we're talking about bodies, we're talking about the desire for eternity and our relationship with this stuff. All right, so great, so that's over there, right? We're talking about Indonesia, Sulawesi, this weird tradition of keeping dead loved ones in the house, treating them like invalids, and then even like revisiting their corpses and taking them out and taking pictures and stuff on a regular basis after they're gone. And I just... that's, it's so far from anything that I could possibly consider being a part of my life that it just struck me as the strangest thing. And so, but then I was kind of like, okay, you know what? I'm Catholic. It's like, I mean, this used to be more, at least, I mean, dial that, that's 11, take it back to like a 2. And this was our experience, right? I mean, we think about it, someone used to die. And you didn't just ship them off to some place to be prepared for the family, the people that loved them would be the ones that prepared them for burial. And think about a traditional like Irish wake or something where you'd have the body in the house for like a couple of days or whatever. People would come over and view and you'd eat and drink and talk. And it was like kind of that's a very old tradition in the West. Of having the deceased person's body in the home and doing all that stuff that we think of, like going in my hometown, you go to Boyer's Funeral Home and you go in and you drink the bag coffee. I remember the bag coffee in these little plastic cups that like were in these little cup holders with a lid on them. And it's just like thin and hot and just like bag cookies. And you're like, then you would kind of go back and forth into the viewing room and come back in and have a family argument and then leave and go back into the other room. But that wasn't the norm. And, you know, Father Brian Larkin, Easter break, over the Easter weekend, one of the masses, he was talking about the churchyard. And you see old churches always have a cemetery attached to them, the churchyard. And the people that were in that church, when they died, they'd be buried at that church, right? And so when you walked to Mass, you would often like walk through the churchyard. You'd walk through the cemetery. So you're like there, you're right there. And so all your loved ones, grandma, grandpa, everybody is like there with you, like while you're going to church. But I mean, yeah, in a coffin, 6 feet under, out there, tombstone, you know, little different thing. But having that nearby and that being part of our kind of like our faith was pretty normal. Now, let's take it a little farther. Relics. I mean, I am sitting as a crow flies through walls about 15, 16 feet, I think I'd have to measure it, from a very small chunk of St. Monica and a very small chunk of St. Augustine. Relics. Pieces of dead people that were very holy. What is that about? Right? We cut up saints and keep pieces of them. That's just absolutely bizarre, right? Or is it? So in the early church, I mean, you would have these great martyrs, right? And then you would go and, you know, as would be the norm, you would prepare the body and, you know, take them and bury them, and you're part of this whole process. And then you would go visit their grave or whatever, and people notice, and okay, we would go visit this person's grave, and sometimes like healings would happen or miracles would happen or something. And they started realizing, oh, there's kind of like an attachment of holiness in some way or some kind of a special action of the Spirit of God attached to the bodies of these saints. And this makes sense, right? This isn't a prison that has been sloughed off. That's why we don't, for the most part, and it used to not be the case at all, we don't burn people. We don't make a big funeral pyre and push them out on the lake like a Viking. We bury people because at the end of time, we think we're going to get our bodies back. We're going to get, now, what does that mean? I don't know. I'm not the Twinkie I ate when I was 8. My matter changes out. Now they think about once a year, your matter changes out, which will make you eat better if you think about it. Because you are what you eat, and it changes every year. I'm a lot of really sketchy stuff right now, but but it changes out, you know. So what is it? But I mean, it's still that matter was in touch with the spirit, and so that brings us to the idea of like incorruptibles, right? Now some of these incorruptibles are not so incorrupt. They're kind of partially incorrupt. A lot of them have wax masks on and stuff to kind of cover what's going on. But there's an example of where we as Catholics, in fact, do exactly what they do. We keep dead bodies around, sometimes under a glass case, under an altar. Now that's kind of pedagogical in a sense, because you're sitting there praying to Saint so-and-so, and there's Saint so-and-so's body under the altar. And so what, who you're praying to? Well, you're praying, you know, Saint Thomas said that the soul of Peter is not Peter. Properly speaking, a person, a human person, has a body. So the souls of the saints they're praying to are in a kind of a state of imperfection, even though they're in the beatific vision. They're in their souls, you know, but they're not full human persons at the moment. It's kind of weird to think about. Because we're kind of subtly Gnostic. We're kind of Manichaean in our thought. We think the good, spirit good, body bad. You know, we're all Platonic. We're going to just slough off this prison and be the spirit that we really are, right? And, but it's like some of these incorruptibles, some of them are remarkably incorrupt. Some of them were actually preserved and mummified and stuff, like the people in Indonesia. And we go back through the records, and it wasn't like anybody was trying to pull a fast one. You find some records of like the townspeople asked to preserve Saint so-and-so because they all loved her so much, or, you know, so it's actually, she was mummified. She's not incorrupt. But some of them are incorrupt. Some of them, they call them incorrupt and are kind of not so much. Some of them, there's maybe a natural mummification, the way they were buried or something like that. But you go around Europe and you do it. So I remember being in Vienna, and I went to, I can't remember which it was. it was one of the big churches in Vienna. There's a billion of them. Really beautiful church. And I'm going there, and there's like this random side altar. And what a random side altar was. The painting of like the dedication of the altar was to St. Jose Maria Escriva, the founder of Opus Dei. But under the altar was straight up a skeleton in armor. And I was like, I was reading the Latin and trying to figure out like what the name was and translating it. And I finally figured out, oh, it was just saying that this was from the catacombs. It wasn't saying they knew what the guy's name was or what it was. It was like, literally they were like, hey, we got a space under this altar. Do you happen to have like a dead guy? Yeah, we got this guy, some armor from sitting around, you know, from the catacombs. Hey, we'll take him. Good. Let's put him under the altar. Who is he? I don't know. He's in catacombs. He must have been holy. They buried him down there. All right, good. I'm like, as a revert, there's still, this is the part of the faith that I'm kind of like, I don't know. I have a crazy idea. He's dead. Let's put him in the ground. Maybe not under the altar, but people used to have a very different take on these things, right? It wasn't unheard of. So yeah, so I'm just like going through a church in Vienna, taking some pictures. That's a beautiful stained glass window. Wow, boy, there's a lot of tourists in here. Wow, this is really cool. Well, I wonder what that's for. Oh, dead guy from the catacombs. All right, cool. So one last Vienna story. I was walking along with Pater Edmund Wallstein. Michael Wallstein's son, who's a Trappist, or a Cistercian, not a Trappist, he's a Cistercian monk at Heiligenkreuz. That's a hard thing to say. Holy Cross Monastery. Just kind of out by Treiskirchen and outside Vienna. And so we're walking around. He's like, you know, dressed like a monk, because he is. And he says, oh, so this is the Augustinian Kirk. This is the St. Augustine's church, and there's the Franciscan Kirk over here, right? And he's like, you know, oh, the emperor and his wife, their bodies are buried in this church, but, you know, their hearts are over in this other church. And I'm like, okay, I'll ask. I call me a dumb American. I look at my friend who's a monk, and I say, why are their bodies in one church and their hearts in another church? And he looks at me just like I'm nuts, and he's just like, so they could be venerated in both places. So this used to be the norm, right? This is like what this weirdness that's going on over in Indonesia and Sulawesi. It's kind of an 11. We used to kind of be comfortable with about a 7. Now we're kind of got it dialed down to like a 2. Okay. But this is something that people have always reckoned with. So to end this up, the idea is that we have this thing called the communion of saints, right? It's like the church is all one, right? That you have the church suffering. You have in purgatory, the church going through their purgation, being cleansed. You have the church militant. Those of us are still fighting the good fight here on earth. And you have the church triumphant, which is that great cloud of witnesses up in the sky and the saints. And they're just like, you know, not in the sky literally, but you know, like you know, the people, I like the picture, like all the saints lining up. If I make it finally after 6,000 years in purgatory and I go running in, they're going to get on the other side. And I just do that double sided, like hand slap, you know, it's run down the middle, like slapping hands. And they're like, yeah, he made it finally. Woo. That's how I like to picture the great cloud of witnesses. But you know, I'm going to end with, you know, C.S. Lewis talked about, you know, he said that you've never met a mere human being. Every person you've ever met was, if you could see them in their ultimate destiny, they would either be a figure of such great horror that you couldn't look at it, or something that you, in their glory in heaven, and that you would be tempted to worship as a god or a goddess. That's our destiny, that we're in, that those people in heaven, those people suffering in purgatory, the people that have died are still in communion with us. We're still all in one church. That's why you want to get someplace where you can still be in communion, right? So there you go. Wow. Talking about dead bodies right in the middle of Easter. That's how we do here. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork, on another episode of The Counterposition. Thanks for coming out.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.